Item 1115.
1115, consider the appeal of Deborah A. Byrne against the hearing officer's decision to approve a conditional use review for a new 8-space parking lot on Imago Dei Ministries property at 1404 Southeast Ankeny Street, LU18-174083CU.
Thank you.
Okay. We need to recognize our city attorney first to make some announcements about today's hearing.
Got it. Thank you. Good afternoon. This is an evidentiary hearing. This means you may This means that you may submit new evidence. This is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to materials and issues in the record. We will begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 15 minutes to present her case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak. The principal opponent, the applicant here, will have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. If there is no principal opponent, the Council move directly to testimony from persons who oppose the appeal after supporters of the appeal conclude their testimony. After the principal opponent, the Council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 7.5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. The Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the Council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the Council makes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the Council. For on-the-record hearings, I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing the City Council today. The evidentiary record, again, is closed. Again, this is an on-the-record hearing. This is a hearing to decide only if the hearings officer's decision made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. This means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the hearings officer. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. The Council will not consider the new information, and it will be rejected by the City Council, rejected in the City Council's final decision. Objections to new evidence. If you believe a person has addressed the City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to that argument. Objections to new issues. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the hearings officer, you may object to Council's consideration of that issue. The applicant must identify constitutional challenges to the conditions of approval. Additionally, if the applicant fails to raise a constitutional or other issue related to the proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow the Council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. I would like to make two announcements. One is that if everyone can, both Council and the public, make sure that they state their name before speaking, that's an accommodation that the applicant requested, and I will try to remind you as well, but before speaking, please state who is speaking. And then the other is that we have received statement from the appellant, both in initial submittal and the rebuttal that's in your packet. And as identified in the applicant's testimony and then also confirmed by staff, there are a couple of pieces of information that are considered new evidence and that we'd like you not to consider today. Specifically, there's a reference to a phone call to phone calls to 911 about homeless issues, media interview confirming the applicant's interest in allowing car camping, and a city auditor's report from 2017. If you, Council, could please refrain from considering that evidence. It was not included in the record before the hearings officer.
Okay. Thank you, Lauren. Do any members of Council have any conflicts of interest to declare?
No.
Okay. Do any members of council have ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of this hearing to disclose?
No.
Okay, seeing none. And have any members of council made any visits to the site involved in this matter? Seeing nobody? Okay, no.
This is Commissioner Randa Fritz. I believe I have been to the site on a previous occasion, but not in the last several years. I'm not certainly not in relation to this application.
Okay, and do the council members have any other matters that need to be discussed before we begin the hearing? Okay, then we will begin the hearing, and we'll start with the staff report.
Good afternoon. I am Andy Galizia. I'm a planner with the Bureau of Development Services. This is an appeal hearing for a Type 3 conditional use review. The conditional use proposal is a new surface parking lot at the Imago Dei Church. The hearings officer approved this conditional use review after a public hearing, and that approval was appealed. The appeal was based on impacts from the use of the church property by persons experiencing homelessness, on the impacts of tree removal, and on impacts to traffic safety and the availability of on-street parking. And my role here today is to present the hearings officer's decision. So this is the site. This is in inner southeast Portland, between Southeast 13th and 15th Avenues, just one block south of East Burnside Street. The site contains two existing church buildings. There is an existing 12-space parking lot in the southwest corner of the site, near the corner of 13th and Ash Streets. And the proposed parking lot would have 8 spaces and would be at the northeast corner of the site near the intersection of 15th and Ankeny. This is the zoning map. Most of the site is designated with the R1 multi-dwelling residential zone. The southeast corner is designated with the R2.5 single-dwelling residential zone. Churches require conditional use review in both of these residential zones. Generally, the neighborhood east and south of the site is zoned residential, and properties to the north and west have commercial and employment zoning. However, several of the properties to the north and west are developed with apartment buildings. This is the applicant's site plan. You can see the existing 12-space parking lot in the lower left and the proposed parking lot in the upper right. There are 7 trees shown for removal, including one that's in the public right-of-way. 4 of these 7 trees are less than 6 inches in trunk diameter, so under the city's tree code, they could actually be removed without the need for a permit. The other 3 include a 16-inch tree in the public right-of-way, a 12-inch tree on the property, which is the southernmost tree shown for removal on this plan, and the largest tree shown for removal is a 33-inch black pine tree, and that's the northernmost tree shown for removal on this plan. So next, I'll review some photos of the site and the surrounding neighborhood. On the right side of each of these slides, you'll see a map with an arrow indicating where the photo was taken from. This first photo is a photo of one of the existing church buildings, viewed from the corner of 15th and Ash Streets. This is a photo of the existing surface parking lot in the southwest corner of the site. This is viewed from Southeast Ash Street. This is a photo of the northeast corner of the site. This is where the new parking lot would be constructed if this were approved. On behind the sidewalk, on the right side of this photo, you can see the 33-inch black pine that would be removed for the new parking lot. This is a photo looking across the street from where the new parking lot would be on the east side of Southeast 15th Avenue, just showing the residential neighborhood there. This is a photograph looking northeast from where the new parking lot would be. Southeast Ankeny Street is a bike boulevard. And this is looking to the west from where the new parking lot would be. You can see here on the north side of Southeast Ankeny Street is an apartment building across the street from the church. The conditional use approval criteria for institutional uses in residential zones are here. The first criterion is the proportion of household living uses, and specifically that the overall residential appearance and function of the residential area will not be significantly lessened due to the increased proportion of non-residential uses. In this case, the site is already developed with a non-residential use, the church. The proposal would not increase the number of non-residential uses in the area or the intensity of the existing church use. The new parking is intended for the existing level of parking demand from the church it would accommodate some church-related parking that's currently happening on the street. So for these reasons, the hearings officer found criterion A was met. Criterion B is for physical compatibility, specifically that the proposal will mitigate differences in appearance and scale with adjacent residential development. This is the applicant's landscaping plan for the new parking lot. There would be rows of evergreen shrubs and 10 new trees around the parking lot. That's in addition to the existing street trees between the sidewalk and the street, all but one of which would be retained. The applicant's plan shows most of the parking lot with perimeter landscaping setbacks that are deeper than the 5 feet minimum that's required. Concerns were raised to the hearings officer about tree removal and especially about the loss of the 33-inch black pine tree. The hearings officer found that beyond the tree code requirements, which the applicant's proposal would meet outright, tree removal was relevant to conditional use approval criterion B for physical compatibility. However, the hearings officer found that even with the proposed tree removal, the landscaping plan around the parking lot would be sufficient to promote physical compatibility with the residential area for purposes of this criterion, maintaining a green edge for this corner of the site and replacing the 7 trees to be removed with 10 new trees. Concerns were also raised that the new landscaping would block views into the new parking lot from outside the site, but the perimeter landscaping requirement is not intended to fully screen views into the site. The new trees would be spaced more than 15 feet apart, and the shrubs along the outside perimeter of the parking lot would be about 3 to 4 feet tall at maturity. So for these reasons, the hearings officer found that criterion B was met. Criterion C is for livability, and specifically that there would be no significant adverse impacts related to noise, glare, late-night operations, odors, litter, privacy, and safety. The hearings officer found that the new parking lot would not have significant adverse impacts for any of these factors. The parking lot would have only 8 spaces, so the number of vehicles entering, exiting, or maneuvering through the parking lot at any one time would be minimal. The parking lot would be separated from the nearest neighboring properties by 60-foot-wide street rights of way. Concerns were raised to the hearings officer about the traffic safety impacts of the new driveway in relation to the intersection of Southeast 15th and Ankeny. The Portland Bureau of Transportation, or PBOT, analyzed the proposal for any safety impacts, and PBOT found the proposal would not have adverse safety impacts on the adjacent streets. So for these reasons, the hearings officer found that criterion C was met. Criterion D is for adequacy of public services, including for the transportation system. PBOT evaluated a transportation study submitted by the applicant, and PBOT found the transportation system is adequate for the proposal. PBOT found the new parking lot would absorb some of the existing parking demand from the church that's currently accommodated with street parking. Some neighbors raised objections to the hearings officer that the driveway access to the new parking lot would remove 2 on-street parking spaces that are currently available for neighbors, and on-street parking in this neighborhood already being very tight. The hearings officer reviewed PBOT's findings and the applicant's transportation study and found that the new parking lot would improve the parking situation in the neighborhood during the times of church activities. And the hearings officer also found that even when there are no church activities, the loss of the 2 on-street parking spaces for the new driveway would have only a small impact on the overall availability of street parking in the neighborhood. The transportation study indicated there would still be some unoccupied street parking spaces in the surrounding neighborhood after the new driveway was constructed on this block. So while the hearings officer agreed that the evidence in the record showed that street parking is already tight, he did not find the evidence in the record to show that this proposal would be a tipping point that would worsen street parking availability to the point that the transportation system could not be found adequate for the proposal. In addition, the Water Bureau, Police Bureau, Fire Bureau, and the Bureau of Environmental Services all evaluated the proposal for adequacy of public services, and none of these bureaus raised concerns. So for these reasons, the hearings officer found criterion D was met. Criterion E is for consistency with adopted area plans, and this site is within the Buckman Neighborhood Plan area. The hearings officer found the proposal was consistent with relevant policies from the neighborhood plan because the proposal would increase the off-street parking capacity on the church property from 12 spaces to 20, absorbing some church parking that's currently happening on the street, and also because the church implements other measures to manage parking impacts, such as 4-day work weeks for all church employees and maintaining shared parking agreements for use of some neighboring off-street parking lots during Sunday services. So for these reasons, the hearings officer found that criterion E was met. The hearings officer found that each of the approval criteria were met, so the hearings officer approved the conditional use review. I want to mention that one of the concerns brought up to the hearings officer by the appellant was that the church may intend for the new parking lot to be used for overnight camping in vehicles by persons experiencing homelessness. In response to that, the hearings officer stated in his written decision that he reviewed the applicant's proposal as written against the approval criteria, and since the applicant's proposal did not mention overnight camping, the hearings officer found that any potential for camping on the new lot was not relevant to his review. So he did not address that concern further than that in his decision. And that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And I also want to mention that the PBOT reviewer is here to answer any transportation questions. Thank you.
So I had a question. Could you just back up a little bit? You said because the applicant did not mention overnight camping in the application,
right,
the hearing officer found that not to be a potential concern?
Essentially, the hearings officer stated in his written decision that he felt bound to review the proposal submitted by the applicant and not comment or consider speculation from others of what the applicant may intend.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Other questions? Okay, then we'll hear now from the appellant.
Am I to sit here?
Yeah, Carla's going to help you get in your chair there.
It's going to take me just a minute to set up my system.
Okay.
So, you know, I am legally blind. I have no central vision. And during my presentation, there will be pauses because I'll be listening to my notes.
Okay.
And this is Commissioner Mandelfritz. Under those circumstances, we would allow more time if necessary, right?
Yes.
Commissioner Fritz, we've already made that accommodation based on her request, and so typically she would have been allowed 10 minutes. She's being allowed 15 minutes. That's how much additional time she had indicated she would need. But certainly, if more time is needed, definitely.
Thank you.
This is a new computer for me.
Okay, so I want to start by...
Could you give us your name first?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Deborah Byrne.
Okay.
And I live one block from the proposed project. I've also been a parishioner in the church for 4 years. What I want to first address is the on-record limitation, and it seems timely given what was just presented to you, the commissioners, before this appeal, that I have been profoundly blocked in making an appeal based on my disability. I don't know if you know this, but the Bureau of Development Services offers residents in an area, you know, or whoever wants to review a land use application, they're supposed to come in person to a window and physically look at the documents that the applicant has submitted. These documents were not made available to me until after the hearing officer made his decision. I did not receive a timely notice about this application. I found out about it 2 days before the hearing. So as I understand it, I am being required to limit my presentation based on information I could not even obtain. I feel that's really inappropriate and is discriminatory. I spoke with Danielle Brooks in the Office of Equity and Human Rights with the City of Portland, and they told me that the BDS has been flagged before about not having an ADA coordinator. They still don't have one. In order to be compliant with the ADA, the BDS should have made these documents accessible at the same time they made them accessible to people who are sighted. So I object to the expectation that I am limited in responding to this application with information that I was, against my will, prohibited from having until the whole works had already been preceded. Because once it went to the hearings officer's office, I asked for the documents, and I was told I could not have them until the hearing officer made a decision. I reached out to the applicant's attorney and asked them for good faith copies of the documents, and they were not provided. Well, they're not required to by law, but when you look at the totality of what happened, this is really unjust. So I'm going to go ahead with my presentation, and you could stop me if you feel I'm talking about something that's not on the record. So I'm going to jump to the safety issue because I think that is the most significant. There's a microphone there. Well, I'm reaching for my water, which I can't find.
Your water?
Yes.
My water.
Oh, there's no water up here.
I got it.
Ms. Byrne, while it's Nick Fish, while you're waiting to continue, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I'm reading off of the materials that we have, which includes the decision of the hearing officer, and it says that the hearing was held on August 13th, 2018. Is that correct?
That sounds right.
And it lists a number of people who testified at the hearing, and it includes Deborah Ann Byrne. That would be you?
That's me.
It goes on to say that the record was held open for an additional week for new written evidence and until a week beyond that for any rebuttal. So is that a fair statement that you were given a week following that hearing that you testified in to present any, quote, new written evidence?
Yes, I was given a week, but without any of the applicant's documents.
Okay, and when did you come into possession of those documents?
Approximately, the BDS gave them to me about 1 or 2 days after the decision was made, and then it took me another 2 days to get those transferred into an accessible format.
Okay, thank you.
So I want to talk about the traffic safety hazard, and I have to admit I haven't seen the PBOT. It's a Portland Department of Transportation finding, but I have seen the Kittleson report that the applicant uses. So this diverter is really unique. It's a diagonal diverter. I hope you're able to see it on the image that you have. Traffic traveling east on Ankeny has no stop sign. They turn right. And some of them are going quite fast. It's like a funnel. They're funneled to the right. And my concern, as I explained, was that the driveway would be too close for a driver, particularly a bad driver, to stop in time to not crash into somebody who has slowed down or stopped to turn into the driveway. And additionally, the traffic on the other side of the lane has no divider to prevent them from turning into the driveway from there either. And in the Kittleson traffic impact study that they did, only talks about they based their decision that there was no hazard because there would be no increased trips based on the parking lot. That's the only measure, if you read their report, that they're using to say it's safe. They're not talking at all about there's no stop sign, the speed, stopping distance time, what the visibility line is, or the distance of the driveway. And in the public hearing, the applicant said that the driveway would be 50 to 60 feet. And in this legal brief that I just received yesterday, they're saying that the middle of the parking lot is where the black pine tree is. I was told that the driveway would be in the middle of the parking lot at the public hearing. So I don't know which is true, because the black pine is about 30 feet from Ankeny Street. So if that driveway is even shorter, there's even more of a danger. Hopefully the applicant can address that, whether or not the brief or the oral argument was correct. So I feel that a traffic study, safety study, needs to be done before this is accepted. That really takes into consideration the speed of travel, the time, the visibility, and so that we can reasonably take steps to mitigate the possibility of harm, bodily harm.
Can I ask a question of counsel?
Sure,
here,
please.
For a second? It's Nick Fish. I'm trying to make sure we follow the guidance that you gave us, because you gave us very clear instructions. And we've just heard a presentation about traffic and traffic safety. I don't actually see that issue raised in the notice of appeal, nor in any of the narrative form. So to what extent can we consider that, and to what extent is that new evidence?
So I'm going to defer to staff and the applicant as to whether or not they think something is new evidence that was not presented to the hearings officer. My understanding from staff is that traffic safety was discussed before the hearings officer, mm-hmm. So that issue is not necessarily a new issue. However, whether or not specific details or any facts or numbers are new, that might be new evidence. And unless the applicant objects, you can continue to listen, and the applicant has the ability to object at any time.
But I just want to be clear, because I don't know the answer to this. It's an issue that was before the hearing officer, so it's relevant, and there was testimony.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To what extent are we to be guided by the fact that it is or is not included in the appeal filed by the party?
It should be in the appeal.
Well, I don't see it in the written appeal, and I want to make sure. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe because it's an issue before the hearing officer, it doesn't have to be flagged. I just need to know what the ground rules are.
So staff identified that it was raised in the addendum to the appeal. So the second letter.
The addendum?
Yeah, the appellant filed an addendum to her appeal earlier this week, at the end of last week, and it went out to council on Monday.
Okay, and that staff has concluded that framed that issue?
Yes, the traffic safety issue has definitely been framed.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for checking.
Okay, Ms. Byrne, please
continue. How many minutes do I have?
You have 8 minutes and 20 seconds.
Oh, okay. So I want to address the issue of the homeless camping in this area that is the proposed project. So most of the church's parishioners do not live in the neighborhood. This area has been a long-established area for people to sleep. And I could say more about that, but I'm not sure if I'm precluded from. So when I got the notice, I had a reader read me the notice. I went to Rick Johnson, who does land use for the Buckman Neighborhood Association. And that is when I learned that the church had already used public news to announced that Ben Sand was working on the project of getting churches in the area to use their parking lots for up to 3 stalls for people homeless living in a car to park. And that I believe that in the initial hearing, I mentioned that I had information that they had publicly gone with news to say that this was their intent. It wasn't until after the hearing and I did some research that I found out the actual news presentation, which the staff attorney said shouldn't be considered. But I did bring up the issue of media in the open hearing. There goes my belly to talk. So, they've been public, very public about this intent. My objection is that it was not included in their application, as was not the fact that it's already being used for people to sleep in. And I mentioned that Kim, who gave written testimony, had identified, too, that she's seen had problems with racial slurs coming from someone there and defecation odors, and seeing the church kept picking up defecation in this area. And so my objection, not that I'm against homeless car, it's called the homeless car pilot, so it's an experimental new thing. My objection is that in bad faith, the neighbors weren't really told about that intention. In the brief that was disseminated yesterday, said that I should be precluded from the evidence that the police have, the statistics that police have on the various 911 calls to this area that prove this previous use. And the question really is, for me, if we go ahead and put this parking lot here, one, there's already a population of people who live there. And how is the church going to maintain their not being there at night? And two, how are they going to do that if they don't live there? If no one's there to do that work, if it's not managed, it's not supervised. And then the second, which I brought up in my appeal, is that, if there are people camping in their cars, what kind of situation is going to occur between the people who are just camping outside and the people who are in their cars? Most recently, in the last legal brief yesterday, the applicant says that they would be willing to have no outside camping there. I just would like to clarify what that really means and how they would enforce that. So that's pretty much what I have to say.
Okay, so that you're finished with your...
Yeah.
Okay. Questions?
This is Amanda Fritz. Thank you for your presentation. There's already parking on this site, right?
Parking on the what?
The church has some parking.
Yes, they have parking down on 13th. What this is about is that they sold their part. They have 20 staff members. They sold their 26 parking lot on the west side of 13th. Therefore, not having enough parking for their staff, they got $2.2 million for that, and now they want 2 more of our very, very rare public spaces. Just to be clear, they're building a parking lot that will be private. So there's objections around that they're selling their parking to make a profit and then taking from the neighborhood to try to compensate for that.
Okay, and they could... The car camping issue, they could already do that on the parking spots they've got.
That's correct.
So in what way are you concerned that these additional spots increases that possibility?
Well, so this is not on the record. My neighbor Pasha went and talked to Ben Sands, who admitted that, yes, they were thinking of putting the car parking in this new parking lot.
Okay. thank you. I understand. And I'll have questions for transportation staff later. Thank you very much.
Okay, so next we'll hear from supporters of the appeal. Do we have anybody signed up?
No one else signed up.
Okay, anybody? Okay. Then we will move on to the principal opponent, which is the applicant. And they will have 15 minutes. Welcome. If you could just give us your names.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Renee France. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Rather White, Parks and Alexander.
Could you move the mic just a little closer?
Closer. I've always seen people who are too close, and so I'm leery of getting too close.
It's a little louder.
I am here this afternoon on behalf of the applicant, Imago Dei Ministries. With me is Chris Bremer from Kittleson & Associates, who did the transportation evaluation. Also in the room with me is Jane Hansen of Lango Hansen, who is the landscape architect on the project, Ryan Milkowski of KPFF, who did the engineering work, and Jeff Marsh, who is a representative of the Imago Dei Ministries. They're available to the extent the council has any questions in those areas. At the outset, I would note, first of all, recognize that the land use process can be difficult, and especially difficult for those with disabilities. Ms. Byrne did participate in the hearing in front of the hearings officer. She also submitted written communications during the week, allowed for new evidence. As we noted in our letter that was submitted yesterday, there is new evidence contained in her appeal statement and the addendum to the appeal statement. I would also maintain that there is new evidence included in the discussion today about the alignment of the intersection, about the news information, and her response to Commissioner Fritz's question on the existing parking. All of that being said, I raise it as a procedural issue. I think that even if you were to consider that evidence, that you would still find that this application meets all of the applicable approval criteria. I would say on the transportation issue, because there was new traffic safety issue, let me correct, was new evidence submitted on that, that to the extent that that evidence is considered, that our expert on the traffic safety be given some leeway to respond to the arguments raised on the traffic safety context that contain the new evidence. So as staff indicated in their report, in this case, the church has requested a conditional use review for a modest change to an established and existing conditional use. The subject site has been used as a church that has served the surrounding community for over 40 years, and the church is requesting to add the small parking area. The church is not proposing to add any building or change its operations, hours, or services. The new area will provide parking for church staff and visitors, and at the same time, additional off-street parking will help alleviate the on-street parking conditions surrounding the site, as noted by staff. And Chris Bremer will talk about that a little more in just a moment. It has always been the fact that the church is developing the off-street parking for church employees and visitors, and that's been clearly stated throughout the process. That is the purpose of the project. The purpose of the project has never been to create a space specifically for those experiencing homelessness. However, to confirm that that is the case and to avoid claims that additional impacts should have been or need to be considered as part of this application, we have requested a condition of approval that would prohibit overnight camping as an accessory use in the new parking area. To answer Commissioner Fritz's question, we believe that the car camping program still could occur on the existing parking lot, but you're limited to 3 spaces under the accessory use program anyway, and so there's not an intent to have overnight car camping on the new lot.
Well, I just, if I could, Nick Fish, if I could just jump in for a second, because there's some issues here that are sort of first impression for us, and I just think we need to have some guidance.
Sure.
The council has declared a state of emergency around housing, and we have, in fact, I was the author of the pilot, which allows, under certain circumstances, FAFE institutions to use parking for overnight camping subject to certain protocols.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that that's not the issue that's before us, but I guess since it's been raised in the supplemental materials and we're sort of shadow boxing with it, I guess the question I would have for you is, in light of the council action authorizing this use under certain circumstances, is this even relevant to a condition of approval for parking? Because tomorrow the council could modify that pilot. It could rescind it. It could strengthen it. So I guess just forgive me for asking a very basic question, but is it even relevant to the condition of approval if it's something that the council makes available to anyone that has church parking?
It's a good question, and I believe that the answer to that question is that it's not relevant. That being said, this is somewhat of a unique situation where you have a conditional use evaluation that looks at impacts on surrounding properties. And because the church is not intending to allow overnight camping on this parking lot, we didn't evaluate the potential impacts of overnight camping on this particular parking lot as part of the conditional use analysis. To avoid any claims that there could have been improper findings or incomplete findings and evaluation of the full range of impacts that could occur on this lot, our proposal is a simple condition that would preclude overnight camping as an accessory use on this particular lot. Now, if at some point in the future the church wanted to allow that, they could come back in for a conditional use application and do that evaluation. I understand that that's against the intent of the policy of the city, but in this case, it is protective of the church interests to make certain that this conditional use decision is not subject to challenge.
So just to be clear, Nick Fish, if you're offering that condition of approval and that takes that issue off the table, is the only issue left for us to consider the traffic impact?
I think the traffic impact, there's Ms. Byrne in her written addendum also raised concerns about the loss of trees, specifically the larger black pine. So we're happy to address that. I will likely address that because as she has rebuttal, she could identify that. But it would be that issue and then the traffic issue.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Go ahead.
On that? Okay. So I think just basically, do we agree with the conclusions reached by both the staff and the hearings officer that the application satisfies all the applicable approval criteria? I won't run through them again as staff did that sufficiently. But the parking lot was carefully designed to ensure that it is physically compatible with the surrounding residential uses. The sizing of the parking lot was minimized. There was extensive vegetation. The stormwater garden avoids the need for connection to the city's storm sewer and was placed to create a different additional buffer with the residential uses. There's extra interior landscaping. The perimeter landscaping meets the standards and, as pointed out by staff, doesn't create a solid vegetative barrier to address safety issues raised by the appellant. The project will improve the safety and pedestrian experience for all users around the site because the church is committed to updating curb ramps at 6 locations around the site to meet ADA standards as part of the project. In terms of the tree removal, the church did design the parking area to preserve as many trees as possible. We did note that the location of the and configuration of the existing buildings on the site leave the northeast corner as really the only remaining place for the parking lot. Large black pine that is there is centrally located. It is not directly in the middle of the site, but would be impossible to develop a parking lot that would have the functionality and safety it needs in order to function as a parking lot and save that tree. the church is saving the vast majority of the existing trees on the site. Specifically, 85% of the total on-site trees will be preserved, and 71% of the on-site trees that equal or exceed 12 inches in diameter will be preserved, including four mature black pines that range in size from 22 inches to 28 inches in diameter. And I think that presence and number of mature trees demonstrates that the church values the trees on the campus and has been a good steward of those trees. The church is also preserving 97% of the street trees surrounding the site. Finally, they're planting 10 new trees, which exceeds the Title 11 requirements and the zoning code landscaping standards for parking areas. And as those trees mature over time, they will contribute to the neighborhood. With that, I will turn it over to Chris Bremer to discuss the traffic issues, unless there are any further questions for me.
I just want to make sure I understand. So the percentage of trees preserved does not include the 10 trees being added, so there will be a net gain in the number of trees on the site.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Bremer. I'm a licensed professional engineer here in Oregon and representing the firm Kittleson & Associates, who's the co-author of the traffic report that is in the record. I want to try to walk the line of responding to issues within what's the constraint of the record, and we can see if we need to go further than that. First, just quickly talk about the parking impact. The traffic study we prepared looked at three different days, a Sunday, a Monday, and a Wednesday, trying to understand what would be the impact of the site development parking lot with respect to on-street parking. The short story results from that study are that the area that the on-street or the area of the parking lot proposed reflects the area that was most densely used of the on-street parking. So we're putting the parking lot in the right place in terms of where that need is most acute. As you heard during the staff report, there's eight parking spaces proposed on site. Two parking spaces would be lost on street to accommodate the driveway access. So an overall increase of six parking spaces, which will then mean those six vehicles are not seeking on street parking during the church events. So from a parking perspective, that was the conclusion there. With respect to driveway spacing and answering the question where the driveway is located, within the record, the last exhibit in the hearings examiner's report, it's exhibit C-2, has a landscape plan showing the driveway location, and that has a scale to it. The driveway is approximately 70 feet south of the Ankeny Street curb line. City code requires a minimum 25-foot spacing, so we're more than double the city code in terms of spacing. We did observe the diverter during our traffic analysis that was in place at the time. We did not flag any safety issues associated with that. And we did note in our report that the visibility would be looked at. And that's looked at in the context of the public works permit process. So essentially, assuming this land use application would go forward consistent with any other land use application, at the time of the public works permit process, there is a requirement to verify that site distance is acceptable and making sure that those vehicles coming around the corner can be seen and stopping site distance is adequate and safe. So from my perspective, I believe the system is safe. I believe the driveway can be provided as proposed without a safety impact, and I believe PBOT has concurred with those findings. I'm going to stop there, but if there's a need to go into more detail, I'm happy to try to do that.
Any questions? Okay, apparently that was sufficient. So does that complete your presentation?
It does.
Okay. Well, great. Then we will now ask if there are opponents of the appeal or supporters of the applicant that wish to testify. Or anybody signed up?
No one signed up.
No one signed up? Okay. Yeah, so we will now go to rebuttal by Ms. Byrne. You have 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. So I did not, in the Kittleson report, I did not see that the driveway is identified as 75 feet.
or that there would be an additional visibility study. So that answers some questions. I would like to address the tree. The argument being presented here is that by adding additional smaller trees, that it more than makes up for the loss of the tree. And in my appeal, I mentioned that the neighborhood is a Victorian neighborhood with lots of trees. Most of the big ones are elms, which we have been losing to Elm's disease, and that the significance of this particular black pine tree is that it would not be subjected to this disease. So in my thinking, the one larger tree has more value than 10 smaller trees. Perplexed by the applicants identifying that there are already 97% of the trees remaining on the site, I guess that by this they must be including the entire two city block area and the street between their two blocks, because I think of the site as being actually the part of the application that relates to this proposed parking lot, in which it would not be accurate that there are 97% of the trees remaining. To me and to other neighbors, the value really is on this one particular old tree, which we would like to keep. Beyond that, I wish that this information about 75 feet distance would be expressed sooner. It seems to conflict with the legal brief yesterday saying that the black pine tree was in the middle of the parking lot. 75 feet away is not at any way where the black pine tree is. And the parking lot is supposed to be in the middle of the parking lot. I'm not seeing how that adds up, and that the block is not 150 feet long. So how is that exactly that the driveway is in the middle of the parking lot when, you know, that would be require it to be the block to be longer than it is? I hope that in your assessment of this application that you look at some of these contradictions. I don't have the information before me to know with any kind of certainty where this driveway really is. And I just would like to emphasize how important it is that land use applications are really evaluated in terms of safety hazards. And I guess it's in your ballpark now to really look at that visibility line, what that is in terms of the speed, because this is a funneled area where traffic is funneled. People enjoy speeding through it because they don't have to stop. And it's really beyond the information I have, you know, given this new information, which was not presented at the hearings office. The open hearing, we were told it was 50 to 60 feet. So we'll have to trust you to make that evaluation.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Byrne. So now we'll move to council discussion.
Mr. President, I'd like to make a motion.
I was just going to ask if we could have the Portland Bureau of Transportation come up.
Good afternoon, Council. Bob Haley with Bureau of Transportation.
So, Mr. Haley, I'm assuming that PBOT did look into the location of the driveway.
We did. The minimum is 25 feet back from the property line on Ankeny. We also, as you noticed, Ankeny is a greenway, greenways are posted at 20 miles an hour. The diverter is there to keep speeds and volumes down on Ankeny and to divert cars off of the bikeway to keep it at less than 1,000 vehicles a day. So if there is speeding going on, it's not part of the approval criteria. That's more of a motor vehicle violation than it is in a criteria to look at. Unless we had a place with bad sight lines and speeding going on, we may take it into consideration. But given it's a low-volume street and low-speed street and the driveway is twice as far back as it needs to be, we don't anticipate any safety issues at all, given also that it's only 8 spaces. You know, if it was 150 with a garage or something, we would start doing a queuing study and visual study for how that interfaces with a street, but not an 8-space parking lot.
Thank you very much. Okay. And then, Commissioner Fish, before you make your motion, I would just like to point out from the hearings office decision on page 5, the hearings officer is not allowed by Oregon land use law to speculate or anticipate matters not directly referenced by the application. The hearings officer finds there is no reference in the applicant's proposal related to a possible homeless encampment. Therefore, the hearings officer will not consider opposition testimony and argument related to the possible impacts from a possible homeless encampment. And then on page 11, the hearings officer cannot legally consider the possibility that in someday in the future, the applicant would permit a homeless encampment to exist on the new parking lot. And so similarly, while I appreciate the good faith offer of the applicant to put in a condition of approval, we don't have the legal basis. The conditions of approval can only be added if they are necessary in order to approve the application.
So thank you, Commissioner Fritz, and I do not intend to offer, I do not intend to condition a proposed motion on a condition of approval, but thank you for going to the record and citing that, because that was missing in what I was going to propose. This is the point in the proceeding, this is Nick Fish, where we take a tentative role to see where the council is, and I want to say, just speaking for myself not the appellant, excuse me. Yeah, I'm sorry. To the appellant, you have raised some issues about barriers to accessing this process and potential accessibility questions. The Bureau of Development Services currently reports to the mayor. The mayor, unfortunately, is not here, but I intend to raise those concerns with him. I think you have identified some issues that we need to take a look at. Nonetheless, after hearing the testimony and reviewing the record, I offer the following motion for consideration, that we deny the appeal and uphold the hearing officer's decision to approve the proposal.
Second. And it would be tentatively coming back later with findings, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded.
So I'd like to set a date and time certain for when you'll come back to adopt the findings. So just before, as a part of your motion, sorry.
Okay, well, as part of the motion, you want to have that?
No, let's
all right, go ahead.
Let's first test to see whether we have
and have a vote,
right,
and then
right.
We'll set
I'm
the
sorry,
time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Carl?
So discussion of the motion, or is there any discussion?
Well, I'd just like to agree with Commissioner Fish. I'm concerned and disappointed to hear the challenges that the appellant faced in accessing information that should be available to all members of the public. And however, that doesn't change how I'm interpreting this case. I do think we need to make a real commitment to following up on that and ensuring that everyone has equal access in a timely fashion.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, Carla, please call the roll.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Ms. Byrne, thank you for bringing these issues to our attention. As Commissioner Udaly said, we are sincere, as we showed by our previous discussion earlier, to improve how the city provides services to everybody. And so that's something that we will look into. However, I support this motion because I believe the approval criteria have been met. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye. So the tentative decision has been made to approve the application, and then we need to set a date for the findings to come back to council?
Yes, thank you. Lauren, yeah.
How much time does the Bureau need for findings?
2 weeks.
Okay. Would November 7th, it's Wednesday,